Chapter 25. Aspen. Aspen watched helplessly as Kiraly and Nekthat appeared from the darkness like spirits of death, throwing knives through the area around him. The blades neatly missed Aspen's crumpled body, but one struck home in the whiny elven vampire, who appeared out of the darkness, clutching the hilt of a blade stuck in his shoulder. He looked more surprised and angry than hurt, but the goblins just shared a feral grin as Kiraly lunged into motion. The female Justat switched to throwing thin wooden needles in a deadly spray, and the vampire gurgled as one buried itself in his throat. Another stabbed his shoulder next to the knife he was trying to pull out, causing him to fumble it. Then Nekthat, who had re-entered stealth, as soon as the vampire's attention focused on Kiraly, neatly sliced off the man's head, sending it rolling across the floor. Kiraly gave it a contemptuous kick, lobbing it into the bright sunlight outside the shadow cast by the overhang under which the vampires had been sheltering, and the head burst into brilliant blue fire. Kiraly crouched by the vampire's body, while Nekthat bent over Aspen. The goblin peered into Aspen's eyes, quietly he muttered, "Aspen, blink if you can hear me." Aspen blinked and Nekthat showed his teeth. "Good." He pulled a small stone vial from his belt pouch and unstoppered it. Carefully, the goblin tipped the contents into Aspen's mouth. Aspen felt some dribble from his slack lips, but most of the vile-tasting concoction went down his throat. If a vampire takes more than half of your life at once, you become paralyzed. No skills, no spells, no communication. It's like a spider, storing away food in her web so that she can eat it later. Theoretically, it will wear off eventually, but I don't know anyone who lived long enough to find out how long it would take. The potion will clear it up in about 15 minutes, but don't try to move before then, or you'll send the remaining venom through your system, and it'll take even longer. Kiraly touched Nekthat's shoulder, and the male goblin patted Aspen's chest once, then stood and was gone. From outside, the sounds of battle echoed. Clashing blades and cries of pain filled his ears, and in spite of Nekthat's warning, as soon as he felt some strength return to his muscles, he rolled his head toward the cave entrance. Nekthat and Kiraly stood there, long blades whirling as they spun in a dance Aspen had only seen once before, when a goblin assassin had been cornered after butchering one of the few competent generals the human army had left. The goblin had killed 8 soldiers before Manuela had pulled his soul from his body, and Aspen had turned his corpse into one of his undead minions. Nothing larger than a fruit fly was going to be getting in or out of the shadowed cavity, until the goblins were good and ready. Shortly after that, Aspen caught a faint hint of a voice in the back of his mind. He had been straining to reach out with either his link to his animal companions or the traveler's party chat, but had met only the chaotic turmoil of his own thoughts. At last, however, he thought he heard Rouge's strained voice saying, "Now," and shortly after that a familiar cacophony assaulted his ears. Lyrek's wailing song continued for a minute or so, punctuated by the distant echoing ping of lute strings snapping. Abruptly, a man's voice shouted something incoherent, and darkness fell. The sunlight blazing down outside the cave entrance vanished, before another, much smaller voice shouted something in return. Silence fell abruptly, before an unnatural light blazed white hot, then vanished again. Sunlight returned, and a hush fell over the world. Lyrek started singing again, and Aspen distinctly heard Silas say, "It's over." "Lyrek, stop. My ears hurt." Aspen's mouth twitched, and he thought as loudly as he could, "We won?" Silas squeaked, and a small streak of dark brown and silver shot in through the crevice the goblins were no longer protecting. "Aspen. Aspen, are you okay? Are you hurt? Why are you always getting hurt?" The last question was definitely accusatory, but Silas was gentle as she dropped to land on his chest. Her little face appeared briefly in his vision, and she squeaked again, angrily this time. "Who bit you? You have a great big hole in your neck. Can't you heal it?" Rouge chimed in, sounding tired and overwhelmed. "Aspen. What's going on? Why aren't you answering?" Cautiously, Aspen opened a channel to his mana, feeling it flow weakly at first and then burst through as though a dam had been breached. Warmth flushed his body, and he felt the numerous aches and pains that had accumulated while he'd been lying on the cold stone floor for the past several hours vanish. Gingerly, he raised a hand and felt his neck, where the hot blood that had poured from the vampire's bite had long since turned cold and dry. The skin was tender but intact, and he cradled Silas to his body as he levered himself to a sitting position. "How am I supposed to answer with you two talking constantly?" he asked, and smiled when Silas squeaked in protest. "I'll be all right in a minute, I think. They did something that prevented me from being able to move or answer you. I couldn't even heal myself. He shook his head slowly, trying to shake loose the strange cottony feeling between his ears. Nekthat gave me something to counter it, and now that I can use Mana again, I'm feeling better. Nekthat himself approached Aspen, kneeling on the stone beside him to look into his face. The goblin's usual expressionless mask cracked enough to show a hint of surprise. Are you recovered already? He stood, offering Aspen a sinewy forearm. Aspen accepted it, and let the short but strong goblin help him to his feet. A shadow blocked the sun for a moment, and Aspen saw Rouge, Doombloom, and Karali come in. Doombloom had her arm around her sister's shoulders, and Rouge had one arm around Doom's waist, and the other draped over Karali's shoulders. Rouge was hobbling on one leg, and Doom was offering the girl a healing potion, which Rouge was waving away with increasing vehemence. Pen will heal me, Doom. Keep that for when that army down there manages to get through the pass. Chris, isn't going to stop just because we took out a couple of his lieutenants. Heck, given that Fanny Hat was lying to him, Akuji may actually thank us for killing him. Rouge's pretty hazel eyes caught Aspen's, and she grinned broadly as she hopped forward. Aspen. I killed Phantom Hat. Like poof, total annihilation. It was awesome. Aspen felt an unfamiliar expression stretch his own lips, and realized he was grinning in response to the girl's sheer, unadulterated joy. Good job, Rouge. You're amazing. He truly meant it, and he saw in the widening of her eyes that she recognized his sincerity. She threw her arms around him and snuffled into his filthy and bloody shirt. I thought you were going to die. Aspen stroked her braids, feeling the tight twists of soft hair and beads pass beneath his fingers. So different from holding Birdie, and yet so familiar at the same time. He sent a heel down through his fingers, soothing away the petite girl's wounds even as he answered. I'm sorry. Sorry to both of you, he said, leaning his cheek over to touch Silas, where she clung in the gap between his shirt and his neck. It was day, and I thought the enemy were still trapped below, or at least that our vantage point was still a secret. I never would have come if I thought there was a chance that the vampires could reach us here. Rouge looked up and grimaced, then wiped flecks of his dried blood from her face. Yuck. Yeah, she stepped back and tested her weight on her leg. I think entering stealth kept the sun from touching them somehow. The old vamps couldn't use magic or anything except their vampire skills, so they wouldn't have been able to do it. I'm guessing Chris, she made the little wiggling fingers that meant she was being at least partially facetious, had something to do with it too. We already know he's a big old cheater, she muttered. Doombloom looked up from where she was examining the holes in Rouge's leathers. Who is? Rouge coughed slightly, then plucked at a hanging flap of leather. Man, this outfit was super expensive. Do we even have a leather crafter in refuge? Doom's eyes narrowed at the obvious attempt to change the subject, but she sighed and let it go, for now at least. I don't know. I've been working with the crafters to start a crafting guild, actually, but I think we mostly have tailors, and an alchemist and blacksmith. Nobody passed journeyman rank, though. Probably because most of the people who were willing to go out and try homesteading are looking for some place to establish themselves. If they were masters, they'd be able to stay home and make people do what they told them to. Rouge glared at the offending opening. These are very rare, so they'll require a master. Dang it. Aspen chuckled. Shall we return to refuge before we worry too much about repairing or replacing our clothing? Karali raised a black brow. I believe you should clean up and replace that shirt before Saravale Hui sees you, Aspen Hui. She will be concerned enough, without seeing evidence of how badly you were treated. Nekthat glared at his girlfriend, while Aspen shook his head tiredly. I've asked you not to call me that, Karali. I'm not a lord anymore. Karali's lips twitched in a small, sly smile. It does not mean Lord Aspen Hui. Nekthat hissed slightly and said, he is not Hui yet either. Karali shrugged and waved a dismissive hand. Yet. Now we should return before our queen sends a greater force after us. Aspen nodded and simply stripped off his shirt, though he grimaced as he pulled the areas soaked in dried blood away from his skin. Doombloom's eyes widened, then turned away, cheeks slightly pink. Rouge just slapped a palm to her face. Aspen, Rouge mumbled through her hand, warn us before you do that. I wish I had a backup. Oh. Wait. Her eyes unfocused for a moment, and then she pulled a length of bright green cloth edged with gold trim from the air. I bought this to wear kind of like a sari, but I never got a chance to wear it because someone is always trying to kill me, and long, flowy fabric just isn't great for running away really fast. Reaching out, Rouge wrapped one of the ends of the cloth around Aspen's waist, knotted it tightly, and began draping the trailing end around his arms and shoulders until she was finally satisfied with the result. Aspen stood bemusedly during this process, though the only thing he could really think was, what does Huwei mean then? A few small metallic objects passed through Rouge's fingers before she held up a golden pin shaped like a tree. Carefully, she pushed it through the layers of fabric at Aspen's right shoulder and stepped back with a nod. There. It almost looks like real clothes. Nekthat's lips twitched, while Doombloom, Corali, and even Silas snickered simultaneously. Aspen just rubbed the back of his sore neck and smiled at the young thief. Thank you, Rouge. She shot him a thumbs up, and then opened her hand to show three tiny vials resting on her palm. Turning to Doombloom, she held out the delicate glass containers. A very small amount of some bright red liquid filled each narrow vial completely, and Aspen felt the air rush from his lungs as he stared at them. Do you know what these are, Doom? They were loot from Farthat's ashes. My examine skill is still pretty low, so all it'll tell me is that they're too special for me to even ID, and I can't put them into my inventory. Duh. Phantom Hat probably couldn't either, which is why they could drop, because I sure would have kept something this rare in my private inventory in case I died. Though I guess he probably thought he would never die either, so there's that. She shrugged. Doombloom reached out a hand, but Aspen had already laid his over the exquisite little flasks. I know what they are, he said, almost choking on the words. At least I'm fairly certain. Keep them safe, Rouge. We need to talk to William. Aspen and Rouge sat across from William as the vampire stared down at the three gleaming vials resting on a pad of bright blue velvet atop a stone table. The old man reached out a trembling finger, then curled it into an equally unsteady fist. Yes, he murmured. Yes, I recognize these. It was an identical vial set into the tip of a dagger that took my life and made me a vampire. I remember it was barely larger than the shaft of a feather, so that it would shatter and mix the blood of its victims with the stolen blood of the divine. Rouge blinked. Wait, what? She stabbed a finger at the slim glass containers and their deep red contents. You're saying this is, what? God blood? Aspen looked at William's bent head and slumped shoulders. Yes, I believe so. Atai's blood, specifically. It seemed that the ancient earth mage was too lost in his own thoughts to continue, so Aspen recounted what William had once told him and Mott. Long ago, there was an evil queen named Jezeray. She was renowned for her beauty but had, he quirked a small smile, no other redeeming features. As she grew older, her beauty began to fade, and she looked for a way to stay young and lovely forever. She joined a cult, and a member of this cult brought her three drops of Atai's blood, obtained through some mysterious means. She used this blood to create three greater vampires, herself, her son, and William. Rouge nodded. Sure. My dad told me about this. And she glanced at Silas, who was snoozing on Aspen's shoulder. Silas and I actually met Jezeray, or some version of her, when we went through the trials to reach Gina's temple in Bright. She was a creep show. Aspen frowned. I don't remember you mentioning that. Rouge coughed slightly, looking away. Oh yeah. Well, it was over, so no big deal, right? Anyway, she said she was a follower of a god, and given that Chris is running the show in Bright now, I'd bet that her cult was the same one we're dealing with. Especially given that they're using the same technique to make vamps again. Aspen nodded, mentally sorting and discarding 100 different thoughts until he finally managed. William, are you certain Jezeray only had three of these vials? The fructipere looked up, his seamed face white as bone. Ah yes. Jezeray often lamented that Lamashtu produced only three, and, he grimaced, that she wasted one on me. Rouge cocked her head. Lamashtu. William nodded. The high priestess of the cult. I saw her only briefly when I was killed, he shuddered, but I believe she may have been a dark elf. Her skin was charcoal gray. An unnatural color for those who live in the sun. Rouge's eyes widened. I've only met one dark elf like ever, and she was, she chewed on her lower lip. Well, I'm not sure exactly how to explain it, but I guess she was some kind of servant of the gods. Chris, I suppose. She trailed off, then drew in a deep, fortifying breath. Look, you know I've talked to Gina, and she has this servant named Emily.
Oh.
No, Emily. Anyway, when we met Akuji, I had a vision, I guess, and a dark elf pretending to be Emily showed up and tried to convince me to. Her eyes flicked to Aspen, and she tugged nervously at a braid. To stop helping Aspen. The real Emily, whatever. Anyway, she showed up and helped me realize that I didn't want to do that. Then the fake Emily stopped pretending, and she was a totally hot dark elf with a serious attitude problem. Aspen tapped a finger on the cold stone table as he thought. If this Lamashtu is still around, or this dark elf woman holds the same position, then not only has Chris been working with Akuji for much longer than we believed, but he has also helped others. Possibly many others. And those who receive his blessing go on to commit atrocities far beyond what they would have been able to do on their own. William and Rouge both nodded in agreement, and Rouge said, I looked Chris up in the lore after we found out he was behind the cult. He's supposed to be a god of battle and stuff, sure, but he just looks like a big blonde meathead. He's not supposed to be evil. I mean, he's not even part of the main pantheon. Sighing, Aspen looked at the innocent-seeming files of Ruby Liquid. Honestly, I'd only heard of him because a few of the soldiers I served with followed him. Most soldiers follow Voris, who emphasizes discipline and teamwork over fighting for the sake of fighting. I believe, William offered quietly, that most dark elves are servants of Atai. Rouge nodded. That was actually another part of the reason I didn't want to go full dark elf. No offense, Aspen. She offered him an apologetic smile. I just didn't want to worship a death goddess, and that's literally the only option dark elves get. She's not, Aspen began but broke off. Atai herself didn't care how she was perceived, and Aspen knew all too well that most people's concept of his former goddess was too deeply ingrained to be easily changed. He rubbed his forehead tiredly. It doesn't matter. In any case, if dark elves are only allowed to follow Atai, what is this one doing in the service of Chris? Rouge shrugged. If I were to guess, I'd say Atai probably got pretty pissed at her when she stole some of her blood. Aspen choked on a bitter laugh. Indeed. Atai is a fair goddess, but not a forgiving one. If this Lamashtu was a servant of Atai, and then stole from her and went to Chris instead, Atai would certainly repudiate her. Nodding, Rouge looked at the three gleaming files. My question is, what do we do now? She looked from Aspen to William. I mean, we know how to make vampires, and we have the blood. Vamps are super powerful, and we could seriously use some upgrades on our side. William is proof that vampires don't have to be evil, and that different bats produce different results. She pulled hard enough on a braid that she winced. Look, I hate to admit it, but even with Phantom Hat out of the picture, we're still horribly outclassed. They have us outnumbered and outgunned, and once Akuji gets here, even the Bluestones won't protect us. I know we could survive as a city under siege basically forever with the food we have stored and Aspen's legendary farmer shtick, but you said, she fixed Aspen with a fierce hazel glare, that Akuji was able to sneak his soldiers into Bright somehow. Aspen nodded. We were never able to figure out how, but now I assume he must have had Chris help even then. The Bluestones are a gift from the gods, so it makes sense that it would take a god to bypass them. So basically we're screwed. The first time Akuji and Chris send their minions in spite of the Bluestones, we're all going to be killed. Everything we've done up to that point won't even matter. Unless, she pointed at the vials of blood, we use their cheat against them. Three vampires could be enough to turn the tides. If three of us went vamp, we might even be able to take down Akuji himself. No. William's voice was unexpected and vehement. No one should accept this cursed existence voluntarily. If I weren't such a coward, I would have ended my own undeath as soon as Lord Aspen freed me. The old man pushed himself back from the table and began pacing in agitation. You don't know the value of the breath in your lungs, the pounding of the heart in your chest, and the gentle warmth of the sun on your skin until you lose it all. Every moment is a torment. Sometimes, for the briefest of moments, when I am surrounded by friends or carving away the earth as I did when I was alive, I forget. I forget that I am an atrocity. But a moment later, when my heart fails to beat, I remember, and every time is a little worse than the one before. Rouge was staring at the old man in horrified silence, but when he stopped speaking, she said, I'm so sorry, William. You're not an atrocity or cursed or anything. We won't be using the blood. Aspen's statement was absolute, and he knew his eyes were shards of topaz ice as he gazed at his young friend. You're right that William is no more a monster than we are, in spite of his condition, but neither will we be using Atai's blood without her permission. Then let's ask permission. Rouge leaned forward. Aspen, we're going to lose. Unless a miracle happens, Akuji is just going to walk in here and kill us all. You, me, Silas, Sarave, everyone. Are you going to let them kill Sarave and Juniper because you were afraid to try? Aspen leaned forward too, staring into Rouge's furious and frightened eyes. His voice was rough when he demanded, "And who would you suggest we sacrifice? Would you slay Silas? She's the only bat we have as far as I know." "I'll do it." The voice was small but certain. Silas, who had been woken by the raised voices around her, used her wing thumbs to work her way down to the table. She stood, shivering slightly in the chill, and looked at Rouge, her golden eyes glistening in the light of the glowstone illuminating the room. "If Rouge wants to be a vampire, she can use me to do it. The bat makes all the difference, right? I'm not afraid, if it would save everybody." Rouge deflated as if all the air in her body had escaped at once. The girl fell to her knees beside the table, scooping Silas up and cradling the little bat to her chest. "No," Rouge whispered. "No way. We can catch a wild bat or something, just like Jezere did. Just a nice wild bat." Aspen leaned back in his chair, staring at the stone ceiling as he desperately tried to force down the tears burning in his eyes. "No one is going to use the blood," he said, when he had control of his voice again, "because we're going to destroy it." Everyone else stared at him. Rouge looked torn between frustration and worry, while William's face held profound relief. "What do you mean?" Rouge finally asked. "We can't just destroy it. Even if we don't use it, it's super valuable, and—" Aspen ran his hand through his hair, closing his eyes. In his mind, he saw Atai's face, heard her voice as she told him, "Someday, something precious will come to your hand. You will know without a doubt that it is mine. No matter what, you must destroy it. Do this, and you will meet your daughter once again, and she will know she is yours and no other. Fail me, and her soul is forfeit." The terrible thing was that Rouge was right. Creating three powerful vampires to aid them could make all the difference between life or death for every living thing in refuge. Regular vampires, those created when a living person was bitten three times by a normal vampire, had served as Akuji's shock troops. When their army came up against a particularly difficult force, a vampire would be sent in to slaughter everyone. They were remarkably good at this task, and while Aspen had helped kill more than one of them, he had only succeeded because, as a necromancer, he had been able to take command of them long enough that his soldiers could slay it. Greater vampires, such as Jezere and her son Khalif, were immeasurably more powerful than a normal vampire. They would be stronger, faster, more resilient, and yes, it was possible that they could even wield magic if the right bat was sacrificed. Most importantly, they could command any lesser vampire absolutely, unless Lich Lord Akuji himself was there to counter them. Aspen and Mott had managed to slay the last two, but only because they hadn't fed in centuries and were already all but dead. Even then, Aspen had nearly died and had only survived with Gina's help. If Aspen were truly ruthless, he would accept Silas' offer for the greater good and make at least one greater vampire who could defeat hundreds or possibly thousands of those approaching. More importantly, if Phantom Hat had made any lesser vampires of his own with him gone, the new greater vampire would be able to order them away or perhaps even turn them against their own side. Aspen was not ruthless. Even in his darkest days, he had hated sending soldiers in, knowing they were likely going to die, and he had been far more willing to risk himself than anyone else. If anyone was going to be made into a vampire, it would be him, but that was simply not an option. Selfish. Yorgas had been, in the end, a terrible, selfish man. He had been willing to trade his city, his entire race, for his daughter. Aspen had tried to be better, but he wasn't. This time he would trade this last desperate chance for the right to see Lark one last time. He would ask for forgiveness that he knew he didn't deserve, and she would give it because she loved him. For a very little while, he had thought he might be able to make a different choice this time, but his heart was still that of Yorga's, and there was only one thing he could do. Stretching out his hand, he summoned fire into the tiny silver stoppers of the three fragile vials. With little more than a thought, they melted to rivulets of moonlight, then turned to slag, taking Atai's blood with them. For a moment, the room filled with the too familiar scent of burning blood, searing his nose with an impossibly powerful stench. A cold, ethereal hand brushed his cheek, and a husky voice murmured in his mind. "Well done, Yorgas. Our pact is complete."